All right, welcome to the Eric Lang Show. Today's special guest, Dana. Dana, one of the funny things that we've never talked about this, actually.
Right.
You're a very famous swing coach.
Famous, I don't know. Locally.
I got to take my glove off. We just had a lesson.
Yeah.
It's funny because people think you're not, they think Dana, they think you're a woman. No, I mean, I've had it. We've never talked about it.
Yeah, true.
And but your name from birth was Dana.
Yeah.
Was that like annoying?
Luckily I live in Southern California, so we have this, town called Dana Point, named after the Spanish explorer. So that just threw a lot of masculinity towards the name.
Because you are, like, when I describe you, the word masculinity comes in hot. Like, you're a terribly masculine dude. So, but just to give people a little background, you've worked with Charles Howell III, Grant Waite, a long list of others.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to name a few that I've forgotten?
Currently, right now, Eric Axley, Brad Faxon, Tommy Armour III here and there. There's a bunch of, pretty known players, but all good guys.
And, I think of that job and it just stresses me out.
It can be. Yeah. Yeah. There's a component outside of the challenge of just teaching and saying, well, this is what needs to be done. And there's personalities and there's, it's their job, their profession. So they have to, just like you and I would go to work, we have a project, we have to kind of take into account that we're actually kind of messing with their project a little bit if we get into the instruction. So I'm like stirring the pot, we just hope, cross our fingers, that pot goes in the right direction.
And how often are you like, there must be many times throughout each lesson where you're like, what do I say? Like, or now is it just natural?
Well, so.
What don't I say?
Yeah, and that's a tough one because when you get into, and I don't know if this really necessarily relates to the average guy, but to these guys,
most of listeners to this podcast are average guys.
Yeah. So, we're all creatures of habits and we're human beings, number one. And so if I interject anything within that, there's a possibility of they gravitate to it and they like it, or they just go, you know what? I that stresses me out. Because I didn't feed the cat this morning or whatever it was. But that's part of it. So I think the easiest part for me is on the technical end. That tends to be my gist. But knowing when to do it is another thing. And that's kind of a lifelong developmental skill set. I don't think that you're ever going to get the right answer. There's always going to be trial and error, and that's part of human nature. So... you just have to go through that experience and take it on the chin when it comes, because it's going to happen.
And then when you're like, when you're working with someone and they're not getting it, what do you do then?
So typically, guys, and this is actually an interesting scenario. So if somebody's not understanding, you have to change what you say. Now, that doesn't mean you're changing the information. You have to develop a different dialogue and take it down a different road. Now, that typically to most people might mean change the subject matter, but you can't do that. If a player comes in and they have an issue, like, they're slicing the golf ball, you could go down the road of explaining why the ball slices and they might understand, or that might be a visual thing. You change how they perceive it visually. And or create a different scenario, and any of those three, and you can go down the track on that. If you just create, so good example, and you've played a lot of golf, and so you've kind of seen this. And let's say you, and this is going back to old school for a minute. So, like a Bob Toskyism,
right?
If you put a guy behind a tree and he's a good player, he develops a feel relating to that shot, and he will produce the shot kind of existentially. Like that's just kind of in his nature. So if a player,
a good player,
yeah,
with a lot of experience,
correct. So if you kind of, take a developmental player, somebody who doesn't understand, and you give them, like the left brain side of things, like explain it out, they still might be clueless. You got to develop some feel around that and then develop a picture. And you want them to paint that picture. The better they get at painting a picture, the more fluid everything gets. And that's what we're trying to get to. We want a fluid, dynamic golf swing. It's not connect the dots.
It's so interesting because hearing that now, reflecting back on, we're outside right now. We're at El Dorado Golf Course. Yeah. Golf course?
Yep.
Golf course in Long Beach, and the birds are chirping. And, you know, I'm reflecting on just, we just spent a few minutes on my swing, and the use of visuals in your time with a student is, I mean, you just learn so much more so much quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're trying to like stimulate different things. So there's obviously the video concept of it, right? So we do a before and after. But I think, you know, in golf is kind of in an interesting place in time when we look in the instruction industry, is there's this polarizing situation where, you know, you take a snapshot of a picture of a swing and you say, well, that's where you need to be. Well, you didn't do the whole picture. You're just taking something out of time and space. That doesn't happen. I mean, the ball, you don't just take a picture of the ball flying at 250 and, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing. And the golf swing's the same way. So, you know, you try to develop a roadmap. You try to develop, you know, an expressive way of saying that this whole movement of your pattern is working together, and it's not just one time and space. And I think that's where a lot of guys kind of miss the boat. Now, and even in developing instruction, I mean, myself included, when, you know, I was younger teaching, you fall in love with position orientation. But over time, you start seeing the sequence of the whole thing.
Position orientation, you mean like, I want to be here at setup.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here at the top.
Yeah. And you're not really seeing that. Even in setup, you're moving.
Right.
So Alex Morin's a good example. You've seen Alex. Like, he gets in there and he kind of moves before he hits. Like, he's creating momentum to power his swing. So you take that out of there, it's no longer Alex Morin's swing.
Right.
So
do you think that within a silhouette of a golf swing, you could identify what percentage of PGA Tour golfers?
Oh, pretty much all of them.
That's so badass. Yeah. We should do that sometime.
It would be interesting, right? I mean, I tell people, a good example, if somebody's walking 300 yards down the range, I know who you are.
Whoa.
Right? Because you can.
Just the way they walk.
The way they walk.
I can do probably 10.
Okay.
Freddie Couples, Phil, Jordan, yep. Rory.
Yep.
Yeah, I could maybe do 25.
Yeah.
Hideki would be probably pretty easy.
Yeah.
Hideki's swing. What do you think?
As far as what? As far as the overall swing itself, or just...
The pause at the top.
Yeah, so there's pluses and minuses to everything you do. So Hideki, you know, has that pause, but he creates like this, it gives him like a different, well, we'll call it different kinetic movement if we're getting down to the science-y things.
You are incredibly smart. Did you take your SATs?
No, I didn't actually. I wrote my name. Yeah, wrote my name.
What do you mean? You dropped out?
Yeah, so I was at Long Beach State for a couple of years, and then,
I'm out.
Yeah.
But your mathematical brain is beyond most.
Well, in some regards, I would say more down the geometry side of things.
Right.
I've my brain wants to see what's useful and then throw out the rest.
Okay.
If that kind of makes sense. And it's actually, believe it or not, the older I get, the less important some things are, you know,
in terms of
what you're looking at in golf wise. You're like, oh, you know, that's really not that important. There's something like I held dear. I think like good example is putting, right? That's a perfect example. So, you know, I have some friends on the tour that are unbelievable putters and they break the mold. You're like, well, wait a minute, I held that in high regard before and he's not doing it.
Right.
Right. And you know, your work, you know, you've done a lot of work with Jason Day and all these other guys. I mean, like, Jason's like this outlier.
In his putting stroke.
Yeah. And he putts beautifully. He makes all these magnificent clutch when need to shots.
Right.
And these great putters do the same thing. And you have to kind of see.
Because even Jack, when you go back in time.
Yeah. It was unorthodox.
Nobody putts like Jack anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you're 60.
Yeah.
Wait, so going back to Hideki's kinetic movement.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so he goes to the top and he has this pause, but that encourages his body to want to rotate. So if you have a situation where your sequence isn't right from the top, like you start down with, let's say you pull your arms down or something like that, that you pausing at the top encourages your body to want to turn.
Okay.
And kind of leave the arms up.
So, because most PGA Tour players, even though we don't see it, do pause at the top.
There is a change of direction, yeah.
Okay.
And that's kind of happening when the lead arm is halfway back, the body's starting to move the other direction.
Right.
Yeah. So, and, you know, it's kind of like a snowflake. You know, I try to tell people this.
My swing is like a snowflake.
It's a snowflake. Yeah, it is.
it's unique.
It is, and it's in a dry Southern California environment. So,
so it's gonna melt pretty quick.
I didn't say that. So it's what's very interesting is like we. I think another thing that the industry looks at is I'll say it a little bit broadly here. They're trying to package it. They're trying to package a swing. And we're coming to realize, and most of us are trying to realize that that's not the case, right? So we're all very different. There are similarities. Don't get me wrong. Is there preferences? There's a lot of preferences. But what really matters? So when we do look at these guys hit the golf ball, they're generally in their change of direction and what they do on the ground is totally different. So one guy might have a particular trace that moves his pressure one way, one guy moves it another way. So there are some commonalities, but they're all different.
Interesting.
Yeah, and they're different per shot, you know, what they're trying to do.
I mean, but I guess if you get fundamental enough, simple enough, mm-hmm. it's all the same. It's all just, yeah. It's all just face angle, ball position, club path.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so once you zoom out from that, anyone can build a story with their mechanics from takeaway, top
for
of the
sure.
swing.
For sure.
That's. I guess Furyk is one of my favorite examples mm-hmm. of that.
Yeah.
Do you look at his swing and see terror or beauty?
No, he's awesome. He's absolutely. It's a beautiful swing. So, especially like halfway down and through the golf ball, it's phenomenal. Like what he does.
If he came into you at 8 mm-hmm. with that swing, mm-hmm. saying I want to be on the PGA Tour, what would you do?
Well, he not a whole lot. So, I would probably.
You really wouldn't. You can honestly say you would be like, I like where you're coming into the ball. Let's work on. Let's help that.
Yeah, there's knowing what I know now. I mean, if we go back 15, 10
that's
years,
the thing.
Yeah, 10, 15 years ago, that might have been a different story. But knowing what we know now, and you got to kind of tip your hat to science on this.
Right.
Now we know that there's an efficiency and a need to do some of those things
right.
to lesser or greater degrees. So if that's the case, knowing what I know now, I definitely wouldn't change anything he's doing.
Right.
Now, if he says I want to hit it longer, there might be some things to do to make him hit it longer without sacrificing his accuracy.
Is he not that long off the tee?
No, he's long enough.
Yeah. He's carrying 285, 290.
Right. I think people compare that to the Dustins and the Justin Thomases. Right. So that's on the other side of the bell curve.
What is average PGA Tour carry?
Dependent, I would say right now it's in that 285 to 295 range.
It's funny because I think we all get a little confused about carry and drive distance because
yeah.
it's so much conditional. And
it is.
You know, like especially if your ball is online moving towards the target, mm-hmm. those yards count more.
Right.
It's so interesting because, I mean, I don't know, if I carry a 285, I know now that I'm thinking that's a great drive.
It's a great drive, yeah.
But a few years ago, I was like,
yeah. Well, yeah.
I want to carry a 305.
Yeah, we're comparing it to Roy McIlroy.
Right.
Right. So.
Right. His swing.
Unbelievable.
What is, I'm curious to hear your explanation of the single most unique detail of his golf swing.
Well, okay. So, and this gets a little heated on this. So, one of the interesting things about Roy McIlroy, first we have to understand is how big he is.
He's not that big.
Yeah.
Right. 5'10".
Yeah. So another thing is he doesn't weigh that much. So he's not, he doesn't have a lot of mass.
Below his pecs, he doesn't.
Yeah. So, yes. So what Rory, when he was dominating, in his dominance, and people say, well, look how stuck the guy is. The club's like behind him. And people are like, well, that's why he missed it. Well, it's not why he missed it. And by the way, he's number one in driving, right? So he's
right.
deadly accurate. And he smokes it off the tee.
Smokes it.
So I would say that everybody's saying that he's stuck. Well, maybe that's something you ought to be doing. Because our perception is starting to change over time that that's actually a condition that's good.
Right.
And the more and more that he tried not to get stuck, the more errant he is.
So his sort of perceived weakness was actually...
A strength.
Was what it enforced his strength.
Absolutely.
What do you know about his, caused by hypermobility, his... Mm-hmm. His hip pause at impact.
Mm-hmm.
What am I talking about?
Yeah, so Rory does a couple things that are kind of interesting and they match up. So first off, he doesn't have a lot of hip turn at the top of his backswing. Right?
Interesting.
It's not a lot, but he gets a lot of...
Compared to modern young players.
Yeah, and he gets a lot of, kind of forward bend and rotation to the right with his upper thorax. Now, for depth, his left wrist goes into extension and starts to cup. So to create more, you know, room to create
cup.
More. Yeah, it starts moving from.
Oh, because then he can get a better angle on the club.
Yeah.
Well, because he could do that bowing too, though.
That would shorten him.
So cupping and bowing, if you're not aware, cupping is probably going to force you into hitting a cut. It's when your wrist kind of bends out, and bowing is DJ.
Yeah, and that will open your face. Now, what he does is he goes from extension with that wrist and cupped, and it goes into flexion on the downswing.
No way.
But that's what he does.
And that probably creates speed.
It does, yeah. Yeah, so if he didn't do this at the top, he probably would hit it shorter. So that's the first little outlier deal.
That's very... Do any players actually change wrist condition throughout the downswing?
They all do.
No way.
Every one of them. Yeah. Yeah, you have to.
I mean... I'm talking into like P6.
Yeah. Yeah, the wrist is always increasing, decreasing.
This is a deep dive. Do you know what P6 is?
We're already in the abyss.
P6 is the moment before impact.
Yeah.
P7 is impact.
Yeah.
Position 7. Yeah. What's your favorite position?
Oh, I think if you look at impact, that's kind of giving you everything.
Really?
What you did.
Interesting. So what's funny is on Instagram and on the PGA Tour and all the great Ollie and all these great photographers, they're going to show you the top of the swing.
Yeah.
P4.
Yeah.
P7 isn't really a famous photo.
I think for like Hogan, you see the turn, you see all that kind of stuff. I one of the cool things is you start seeing, there was a good photo, I don't know who took it, doesn't really matter, but it had all these guys with different backswings and they're all good players.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, look, you just swing your swing. It's like, okay, yeah, you better be careful because you better swing your match up. You better swing your swing that matches up to, Kuchar can play and DJ can play and they are completely different at the top.
Right.
I get that. But what happens is I know about 80 guys today on the front of the range here that are going to swing their swing and they ain't getting better.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to match everything up.
How does that make you feel? Because we're here at El Dorado's a public course, a Muni.
Yeah.
You know, average handicap has got to be 18.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm out here. We got mats on the front of the range. And, I'm watching guys just hitting low scooters, low duck mm-hmm. hooks.
Yeah.
High slices.
They just want that moment of just discovery, I think.
Right.
And that's fine. I mean, if that's what they're looking for.
Are you ever like, take a lesson?
Some guys I walk up to and say, hey, look, I see what you're trying to do, but you need to add this and this in order to do what you're trying to do.
Wait. Dana Dahlquist goes up to randoms on the range
absolutely.
and you just do free advice.
Yeah.
They have no idea.
Well, they get a bill in the mail. They just don't.
That's a big bill.
Yeah. Well, now it's Venmo. It's faster. Well, it's kind of my due diligence to do that. So or at least have the discussion.
Right.
And I think guys are curious and they want that discussion. I think guys also are a little bit afraid to ask for advice quite often. And a lot of times it's you're changing their perception of their reality when you have that conversation pretty quickly. And they go, oh, I never thought of it that way. And look, we're all, as golf teachers, we're all trying to do the same thing. And we're trying to do, hopefully for the right reasons, and we're trying to make people better. So what's wrong with going up to a guy and talking to him about, it's a cool thing.
Yeah.
I don't think I even ever have gotten into an argument that I can remember, even doing that. So it's less.
Well, you're you're a pacifist.
And in many ways. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you gotten in many fights?
As of late? No, 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 I have not. No. Yeah, I would say it's kind of like the game of golf. Like if you try to attack anything, it's going to bite you back at some degree. And why do it?
Right.
Right. You kind of have to let, there's going to be this yin and yang thing going on.
Right.
So if you're aggressive, there's going to be pushback.
Right. So I think a lot of listeners to the podcast are relatively new to golf, right? Mm-hmm. They played for a long time and then stopped and now are getting reinvigorated. I think there's a lot of guys out there and women out there who are just starting out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reflecting back sitting here with you on when I started playing golf and just how fertile that time was for mm-hmm. me and how it was like each day it was like a little bit of more of the curtain was pulled back.
And
I would watch these fucking YouTube videos, like on the swing with right. the lines, and like I would go to the range and try to do it. And I don't know if I could say if any part of my life was good or bad, and especially that. Like I don't know if I regret that, but there is it's interesting to look at my experience with lessons, and I was always pretty open to taking lessons. I always thought like, well, yeah, I want to do it right, you know?
Right.
And I don't know. It's just, I guess what I'm getting at is many questions, but like, well, before we get into my real question, can you reflect back on when you first got into golf?
I mean, yeah. So
you played almost your whole life.
Yeah, my whole life. So, and the trajectory is different for everybody. So I would look just from the golf swing end of things, and how my mind works, I want to know why. Okay. So
even back then, 7, 6, 5?
Yeah. Yeah. So
first grade.
Yeah.
How did you get into golf?
My dad played.
Your dad?
Yeah.
Was he very good?
No. He was a physician. He was a great card player. Yeah. He could play gin rummy.
Did you play at a public course, private course?
Private and public. So, okay. Yeah. Virginia Country Club here in Long Beach. Grew up playing there in Rec Park and Eldo and Little Rec and you name it. Hartwell.
Local legend.
Well. Well, what's very interesting, what got me in is it wasn't necessarily like lack of trying. In instruction, it's that, I guess my golf IQ as a whole was, and I'm saying this actually to the parents of juniors, the golf IQ is actually probably more important than the actual swing. And I think when
can you interpret that?
Well, so yeah, I think the best example in Long Beach as of late would be somebody like a Patrick Cantlay.
I knew you were going to say his name.
Yeah. So somebody who has been around the right people from the get-go. So, like, you know, he's been around, obviously, his coach, Jamie, but also, like, John Cook and Malinger and guys locally. And I think if you have an opportunity as a parent to have your kids kind of groomed around those players, the better off you are.
Right.
And, you know, I think we try to do that as best we can as coaches. So if you get that, you get your golf IQ up. And that means everything, like your decision model, how you play, how you behave is a big one. Whoa. Like on the golf
course.
No
club drops?
Well, I mean, we're not a, you know, 50-yard chuck of the driver, but I'm sure that happens. But just everything as a whole comes up, and it comes up with your swing. So, and I think that's important. It's not just the technical end.
Excuse me, everybody. Pause from the interview real quick. I just wanted to take a minute here, a very important minute, to tell you about something that I have in my hands. No, it's not a golf ball. It's not a golf club. It's not golf shoes. It's actually skincare. And it's called Sun Care, folks. S-O-N-N-E. And I've got two bottles of it. And that's the only two that anyone's ever going to get for now, I guess, because I've got one that says morning and one that says evening. How simple is that? Check this out. I'm not reading anything. I'm literally just going off of my own personal experience, designed by golfers, for golfers, and more. Check it out. I'm going to open up this bottle. Oh my God, this is really fancy. Like, you open it up and it's got this like little squeeze. I'm putting on the morning, even though, to be totally honest, it's the afternoon. I'm squirting it out. It's got a nice little squirt top, so you're not going to put too much on. And the idea is that it is it's a high-end. Oh, it smells really good. It smells like, you know, it's good. It doesn't smell too feminine, because that's one of my biggest problems. When it smells super feminine, all of a sudden, I'm like, I don't want to wear that. But the main thing is, it's doctor-developed skincare delivered to your door. You've heard of that. It's kind of like Dollar Shave Club or maybe Vice Golf Balls. Straight to your door. It's got a unique combo. Two product system to protect and enhance your skin. Formulated to combat the number one cause of skin aging, which is, I don't know, it doesn't say here. I'm assuming the sun. Crack cocaine. Probably this doesn't work against the effects from doing hardcore drug use. But basically, in the morning, you prepare. You guard against the UV rays to prevent damage, dull skin, and cancer. Our highly concentrated, non-irritating lotion is formulated by doctors to be amazing. I just kind of skipped through that paragraph. But basically, you've got a morning and an evening. And the main thing is that this is everything you need, and it's actually proven to work. So I think the one thing when I talked with Matt about this on the golf course was he said that the problem is most of the skincare companies basically just put garbage in there. And this one has the opposite of garbage. It's actually got really nice stuff, and it's vegan. So go ahead and give it an order. I'm pretty sure I have a code for you. There it is. www.suncare.com/Eric. That's SONNECARE. Make sure you spell it right. I'm not trying to be annoying here, but or a stickler. But if you don't spell it right, you're never going to get it. You're going to get $20 for both of these, which is 50% off. And I think that's a pretty good deal. So if you're into skincare, which you might not be, but you, I know you have the capacity to change. Not that you have to change, but I'm giving you the opportunity to do it. Okay, back to the interview. Thank you for your time. Suncare.com/Eric. Bye.
That reminds me of when you and I played together, and I remember discussing shots with you, yeah. And it was things I had never even thought of.
Yeah.
Like you were dividing the green up into four parts, am I right?
Yeah, three to four, depending on the size.
Yeah, we broke the green into three to four parts, and we talked never really about where the flag was.
Yeah.
It was always about, I mean, I guess to some extent when you get down to scoring, mm-hmm. you have to look at golf as a problem of, as the mindset is, where's the biggest problem out here?
Yeah.
How can I set myself up to never get in there?
Yeah, it's like an insurance company. It's risk management.
Literally, that's what it is. Yeah. So, well, that's an interesting topic because, you know, what do you think about Tin Cup?
Well, yeah. So that, okay. So the movie itself, the movie itself is awesome. The message is awesome. I think the message is about the importance of everything and really living and dying on that last shot really doesn't really matter. It just shows you who you are and that you're going to go for it. And that's what got him there. That's at least what I brought to the table.
Yeah.
My feeling when I had it. Now, obviously there's an air of disappointment, but you know, it's also how you think of it. You know, he can do it again.
Right.
Right. I mean, now Kevin Costner hasn't teed it up in that movie as of late, but like you really have this belief like, oh, he can do it again. He's good enough.
Yeah.
But it's not his only moment. So why not go for it?
What did you, how many times have you seen it?
Oh, over 12.
Is that one of your favorite? What's your favorite golf movie?
Well, Dead Solid Perfect's awesome.
Whoa, I've never seen that.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh my God, I can't wait to watch it tonight.
It's like an HBO B movie. That's awesome. Yeah.
Oh.
Randy Quaid.
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited. Yeah. Everyone give me shit that I've never seen it.
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
That is actually a problem.
That's the biggest problem in my swing.
Right now.
I haven't seen Dead Solid Perfect. We figured out my swing. So I just watched it again. Mm-hmm. And I mean, dude, I got emotional.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yeah.
Because he's like, it's like, it's so, yes, we can argue that he's afraid of winning.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we can actually also argue that he is not afraid to try something that is incredibly risky.
Mm-hmm.
And to just, everyone's telling him no.
Yeah.
Except for his, like, you know, life caddy, not Romeo, but.
Yeah.
Rene Russo. I don't know, man. It hit me, and she was like, go for it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. And I've seen it.
Well, you need to go for it once in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise you don't live life.
So in terms of, that's an interesting part of the golf game. And that's, I think, what we like as fans of golf is we like people to go for it.
Yeah, we want to see the great shot.
We want to see them conquer.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about from a mythological perspective how you perceive the game of golf as we watch it on television?
Yeah, well, so as you know, you're behind the scenes a lot. So, you know, you're not seeing. Now, it'd be really interesting. I'll just phrase it like this. It'd be interesting if they only show the guys who are just bleeding, missing the cut.
Yeah.
Right. And because that's where you kind of see them grind it out.
Right.
And it'd be really cool to see that.
Guys
and
missing
and
the
mic
cut.
Them up.
Yeah.
Like make them like talking to his caddy, you know,
whoa.
Just what's going on.
Yeah.
But we always see the guy who's making the clutch 30 footer. Then he creates some momentum and then boom, boom, boom. And
that's really interesting.
It's a lot of golf right there.
Well, golf is basically the red zone.
Yeah.
It's the NFL red zone. You're only watching the people making plays.
Yeah.
And so you never even heard. Well, you might hear the Tiger miss the cut.
Yeah.
And that's actually interesting within itself.
Yeah.
Okay. So keep going. The mythology of.
Yeah. So you know, on that level, I think everything that the greatest players that ever have played the game, and I'm going to use Norman as an example, is he was always looking for the shot that was going to bring him back. So whether it's a holdout bunker shot, a good three iron over a tree to a tuck pin or whatever it was, and we want to see that. And we saw that again with Tiger Woods. So we typically didn't elevate our golf experience from watching proper golf. Like we would say, like proper golf might be Nick Faldo,
right,
who would just, you know, stone
Zach Johnson.
Yeah. So we want to see these incredible shots. Now, and the reason for that is like then that makes us go, man, you know, it's possible that I hit that shot. So that the guy goes out and I need to hit my 15-yard, you know, drawing driver carrying it 300 yards. Like they want to have that, you know, perception. And that's kind of sexy. Like
right.
Guys like that part of it. They want to see stuff that they are not typically able to do. I mean, look at Bubba Watson's shot at the Masters where he hooked it around the trees like
right.
that. Well, that takes club head speed.
Right.
Like it's okay, do you swing that fast? But it's amazing to see that shot.
Right.
That's what we want to see.
Under pressure.
Yeah.
Under
good,
pressure.
That's a good song.
Coming down on me.
Hey, you know there's a movie coming out.
What movie?
The Queen movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Freddie Mercury.
You're a huge music fan. You're always at a show.
Go to a couple.
Yeah. Do you like music on the course?
I do, actually. It has to be the right genre. I'm not going to put, like, house music on the golf course.
a night session, maybe. Yeah. Right. What about... first of all, you have a lesson. I don't want you to be late for that. 7:52. Are you okay?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah,
we're in the morning. I got up at 4:45.
Wow.
To get here. I mean, that's not early. You get up at 5 a.m. You said no matter the time zone.
Yeah.
That's like a lot.
Yeah. Something changed. I don't know when, but maybe it was when I was in my 30s where I'm just like, I'm going to get up at 5 every day, have my coffee, and get the day going.
Yeah. Because there's so much bullshit that you have to deal with before you even do the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'll spend 30 to 40 minutes just like fucking seeing what happened while I was asleep.
Right.
I got to catch up.
Right. Twitter.
It's crazy.
What did that guy say?
You sit in an interesting, probably very unusual place in the culture of golf. Maybe there's only a handful of people that are similar to you in the sense that, you're at the top of your field. You work with established professionals, mm-hmm. but you also... We're here at a Muni that's like kind of muddy. The grass is a little bit patchy.
Yeah,
you know, you work with anybody. You give mm-hmm. free tips. Mm-hmm. What is that an evidence of in your like?
Well, So Southern California is an interesting animal. It's unlike kind of anything else. I think maybe South Korea might have
interesting.
Like Seoul is very similar where. Only in this regard, where you go to driving ranges to get better and you play some golf, but there's a huge demographic of people that just want to hit balls because their time broke, essentially. So it's hard for them to get out and play golf. Now, that culture...
Well, Asia golf takes 6 hours.
Yeah.
It's fucked.
Yeah. And it's expensive. So
yeah.
Now here, you know, I'm not just going to go over to Riviera and drop a membership. Like, it's expensive.
Yeah.
So... if you are going to play, you're going to play Rancho, you're going to play El Dorado, play Rec Park, you're going to play, you know, golf courses that are in great shape, they're in good shape, they get a lot of play.
Right.
And so there's a culture of hitting balls. Now, for me, as a golf instructor, the likelihood of me going to a private club and teaching is pretty much not going to happen.
Why?
Well, because there's no access for the outside people.
But at Wilshire, anyone can come in and take a lesson.
That's an outlying...
Oh, that's an outlier.
Yeah.
That's not common.
Yeah.
Huh. That's sad.
Well.
What the fuck? That pisses me off.
Well, I get it. I understand. But, you know, at the same, do I really need to go to someplace? Because.
No.
I mean, there's no.
No, really I love need. That you're here. I look forward to walking up here and being reacquainted with, my origin of golf story was I play golf with my brother one day on a Friday.
Right.
I fell in love after one sliced 3-wood into the water. The next day, I was like, can I borrow your clubs, Chris? And he was like, he loaned me his clubs. Then I bought a driver. And then I basically went to the Griffith driving range.
Okay.
And I had this perception of my future in golf that it would merely take place at the driving range.
Right.
I actually didn't want to play golf.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was very strange.
Very commonly. That's really common.
I wonder what that is. Is that sort of the addictive nature? Is this your lesson? No. I'm so paranoid that your lesson's going to show up and... Huh.
No. Now we're good.
Is it Don Cheadle?
That is not Don.
Not Don. So I... I know that we have to finish soon. So what would you say... This is a hard question. Mm-hmm. You can take your time. What is the greatest thing that you think golf has taught you?
The game itself or just the instruction industry? Because that's a different...
I think the game itself, because you love to play golf. When was the last time you played golf?
Well, I'd love to play it. It's always sporadically, and it's a couple holes here or there. Right. I think what's very interesting as of late, okay, I go out and I play four holes, okay? My decision-making deteriorates quickly. Right, from not playing.
Your decision-making.
Yeah.
That surprises me.
Well, because there's too many distractions. So I don't put a precedent on being organized enough to, okay, well, I don't practice, I'm not playing enough, so therefore the first thing that degrades is I miss, like, an elevation change to a green. Like, something just as simple that you would never forget, or where the wind's coming
like
from.
Like adding 4 yards or something.
Yeah, just stuff like that. And so those are the things that first fall apart. And I think golf kind of teaches you that. And then if you do it enough, it becomes a second nature. So from a personal standpoint, this is just me. It could be different for everybody. And my personality gravitates towards that. Is if I'm just going through the flow and I've played enough golf, things are more organized. So it's kind of a nice cohesive way of looking at me personally. Now, I'm very routine based. That's just who I am.
Yeah, you do. You have bulletproof coffee every morning.
Yeah, just boom, boom, boom.
Is your gym routine locked down?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Boom. And you don't miss it.
No. And flexibility.
Even if you're at a PGA Tour stop, you'll hit it.
Yeah.
You'll figure it out.
Yeah.
That's rad. I admire that.
Yeah, I still got a little muffin top.
Nah, dude, you're good, man. You're just a big dude.
So, but I think that's the cool thing about golf is you know, your personality on the golf course comes out, and you want to make sure that it makes you your best part of your personality come out. I think that's what's important.
I like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking, I'm filled with the golf bug right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how it happened, because, I mean, I love golf so much. I travel, but there was a part of me that just sort of fell out of, I don't feel like I'm admitting something major, but I fell out of love with the idea of, like, I want to score. Yeah. And I just sort of played for fun for a long time. But now all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, yeah. So, and this could be different for everybody, but you know, that's normal. Like, you should have cycles. It's not like you're living in New York or Boston where it's going to be snowy cold and you can't practice. Like, you have a year round.
I have a burden of good weather.
You do. So we'll give you the leeway of it going in cycles here, but... you know, I think there's some people get frustrated, and then some part of that frustration, your brain doesn't want to have conflict, and it just kind of puts on the back burner.
Huh.
And then once that kind of goes away and you try it again, you're like, oh, I'm not frustrated anymore. I'm going to go try it again.
Yeah, it's like I'm calling an ex.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Like, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so what's funny is someone on Instagram sent me a message.
Yeah.
I posted a photo of my swing or a video of my swing, and they said, he went into it.
Yeah.
Like, he was like 7 or 8 sentences about how I was so far back in my swing. And it was funny because I had, like, multiple reactions. My first reaction was, all right, fuck off, I didn't ask. You know, like, I'm good. But then I was like, you know, I've said that myself. I do feel like I'm a little far back there. And so then I went to the driving range for the first time in a long time. Like, I started doing this thing where for the last year, I haven't even really hit the range.
Right.
Not even to warm up.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just show up to a course, going to hit a cut. All right, cool. And I would actually play it pretty well for the first few holes, and then I would start thinking.
Right.
But so I went to the range, and I was like, I'm going to try to take it back a little less far. And then I was in that place where we've worked together for a while, you and I. And I was in that place where I was like, I need help.
Yeah.
Like, I've all of a sudden...
But what did I say about the length in your swing?
Yeah, you didn't care.
Yeah, I was like, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Yeah. You showed me a picture of DJ, of JT.
Yeah.
And you were like, don't, that's not the issue.
Yeah.
The issue is other... So can we talk about the swing a little bit?
Yeah,
can you tell in layman's terms the folks at home about
Eric's golf swing?
Yeah, so Eric's golf swing, you want the mechanical side of things?
Yeah, however you would break it down.
Okay, so the first thing was a little bit in setup. You're really close to it.
I was really close to the ball.
Yeah, and you're not dynamically moving from the get-go.
So no one knows what that means.
So you're not moving around enough. You're kind of just Mr. Stable.
I was basically a lamppost, but when you go through the golf swing, you actually want to move off the ball.
Well, there's going to be some movement. So varying degrees, you could or could not move. But
well, you said something interesting today about keep your head still.
Yeah.
You said that's one of the worst things that you can do.
Yeah, because so, and this is something to kind of realize. When you're, and we use the analogy of throwing a ball. Right.
Yeah.
So if I was going to be in the moment on the mound throwing a ball to a catcher and I want to be accurate, I would probably go into my routine, feel relaxed, rotate and throw it. I wouldn't go into I'm going to try to do less.
Right.
I might think less, but I wouldn't do less.
Because keeping your head still must have some type of fix for someone who's sliding all over and,
sure,
and
yeah,
decreasing
yeah. No,
dynamic.
We're not talking like, so for the beginner golfer, you try to kind of keep their head from going all over the place. Like
right.
You can just basically, that's a basic.
Right.
And how to like go on their left side and finish. Like I'm not saying that, but for the, what happens after that skill set's been put in,
right,
you need to learn how to move your body.
Right.
It's going to do several things. You're going to hit it better, create more speed, and you're not going to hurt yourself.
So we implemented dynamic movement into my takeaway,
yeah.
Into the swing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which took away the compensations of you rolling the club to the inside.
Yeah.
Right?
Because club was too far inside.
Yep. Yeah. So that got that fixed. So the club head was in line to your hands. And then you turned differently with your rib cage. It was less extended and left bent at the top.
Yeah. So in the swing, basically to make room for this super inside club that would then get thrown outside, I was moving forward toward the target
on the backside
because I was also so close to the ball,
right?
And so now I'm much further away and I can actually you had me basically turn my chest down towards my back foot.
That's what it felt like.
It felt like that, but it looks like a normal golf swing,
right?
I literally felt like I was going to pick up a piece of paper by my back foot,
right. And then from there you just rotate.
And then you also said something also counter. You said feel free to bend your left elbow.
Yeah.
And I was like, but no everyone said don't do that.
Yeah, just let it go, it doesn't matter.
Right. And then what else did we do? We picked up some yards. We picked up some miles per hour.
Yeah. So you were like 108, 109 tops, and then we got to 113.7.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've – it's interesting because when I started out, I could really bomb the ball.
Yeah.
Like I was hitting it far and
– to my point. To my point.
Wait, no. Explain that.
Well, so what happens is you take instruction, and it's confining.
Whoa.
No, it is. So you start doing these things and everything slows down. So the natural athleticism just got kicked out of your system over time. It could be a day. It could be a year. But
I was basically trying to, oh my God,
yeah.
I'm having like a real moment of realization here. I was basically going on YouTube and watching these, who's the fucking guy? Like Ted DiVincenzo or something?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
What's his name?
DeFrancisco. Yeah.
DeFrancisco.
Yeah. By the way, those are good videos he does.
He's a legend.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
What he does is he breaks down tour players' swings face on down the line, and he just talks about what he likes and doesn't like.
Yeah.
I really was a student of his before you and I ever met.
Yeah.
And I really did enjoy it, but I was going to the range and basically I bought 8 puzzles and I took a piece from each puzzle and I was like, cool, all right, so let's get these to fit.
There's Washington's head and Mona Lisa's. Let's just smash them together.
Dude, and like it probably damaged a lot of parts of my naturally athletic baseball swing.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'm going to call DeFrancesco.
Yeah.
Where is he based? He's like Canada, right, or something? Have you ever met him?
I've not. It might be Massachusetts.
When do people ever come up to you and they're like, I'm a fan?
Once in a while.
Right.
Yeah, not too often.
No.
It's I don't think I've maybe, and generally they're at tour events.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Do people ever come up to you and say, you changed my life?
No.
Really?
No.
Dana?
I'm going to make my wife listen to this. And then, yeah, no, nobody.
No, you changed my life.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I just want you to be happy.
You changed
happy
my swing.
With your draw.
You gave me four miles per hour.
Yeah.
Five. No,
well, I think that's the whole thing is we're trying to create fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that there's a fun factor, and that's number one.
Well, what's funny is now that I'm reflecting on the changes we made changes to my body.
Mm-hmm.
We never made a change to the club.
Mm-hmm.
We never made a change to any type of thought process associated with the swing. You didn't really talk about in to out. You never mentioned club path today.
Yeah.
All you did was move my body into a position where you went ahead and set it, grip it and rip it.
Yeah.
You said, hit this ball as hard as you can. And I hit a dead straight.
Yeah.
Like one of the best drives I've ever probably hit. And I swung as hard as I could.
Yeah.
Now, that to me was, that was a kind of a revelation, the idea.
Yeah, so it just goes right back to the original thing that I said after looking at your golf swing. It's, you can't fix an issue with an athletic issue.
Right.
And it just, once you go down that chain, it's broken.
So if people listening, you know, like obviously you charge $875,000 an hour, which is like kind of prohibitive.
Yeah, it depends on the country.
Dirhams. How do you anticipate, or, and maybe I don't know this, how can you work with people who are not in your area or can't afford an in-person lesson?
Well, so there's some cool stuff that I've been doing. I have like an online academy.
Okay.
So you can go online, Google it.
What's it called?
DanaDahlquistGolf.com.
DanaDahlquistGolf.com. Dana, D-A-N-A.
Yeah.
DanaDahlquistAcademy.com.
DanaDahlquistGolf.com.
DanaDahlquistGolf.com.
And so there's a component there where you can learn, you know, the swing, essentially the positions, which is part of it, on there. Subscriber based program, so you subscribe to it, you can do it in a month, you can do it a year, whatever, and that kind of gives you kind of the framework or the integrity of what you're trying to learn. And then there's videos on there of me demonstrating, talking about it. Now, also on there, there's online lessons,
cool,
so you can do that. So it's good because it gives, you know, and it's kind of funny. I've had in the last year, you know, a dozen guys or so who are on the site fly. I mean, I have a guy from England, guy from overseas in China, and they come over and they're like, well, I watched all your videos doing it, and they did a really good job of putting it together. But it's maybe the last little piece is they're trying to do it mechanically.
Right.
So there's a few videos on there, like I'm really trying to hit home of, look, this is a movement. You're moving. You don't think about how you walk. You're changing your pattern of how you walk.
Right.
But you still got to walk.
And now these guys, I'm assuming, are obviously wealthy, but no, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
These guys are probably young and with aspirations of playing super competitive golf.
No.
Really?
No.
Of all your, say you've got 100 students, can you break them down into categories?
Well, I have an interesting demographic of players. So I have a huge Asia population of players.
Really?
Yeah. So like
Asians living in SoCal.
Overseas too. So
literally.
Yeah, a lot of competitive Asia tour, Korean tour, Japan tour, that area. And I think it's just because it's the West Coast. And it's interesting, like culturally, they, I wouldn't say they're more advanced, but they kind of are. They kind of know what's right. They have they want to know what's right. It's just their way of thinking. And so they appreciate Dustin Johnson's golf swing, but the reality is they kind of know, like, okay, well, I want this to look good. I mean, a good example is you look at Park, who won the U.S. Open last year. Mm. I mean, she's was the last year, year before.
I don't know.
Yes. But she's got a really technically sound golf swing,
right?
And so you see a lot of that, and so I have a huge influx from that demographic.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then, you know, I have a lot of mid-am players, and obviously a couple PGA Tour guys, but
right.
You know.
Okay, well, that's it. We could spend longer talking.
Totally.
But I appreciate it. Go check out Dana's site. Get better at golf. Don't quit because you suck.
I like it. I like it. I mean, it just makes sense.
Thanks, Dana. I appreciate it.
You got it, brother.
Bye.
All right.